I'm Cameron Esposito, and welcome to Wham Bam Pow. This is a movie podcast. We talk about action and sci-fi films. Also, I want to say right up top, thank you so much if you are rating and reviewing the show on iTunes. We have so many thanks to give you. What am I saying? Also, many people have done it. We really appreciate it. Please keep doing it. If you are listening and you have yet to rate or review, it helps other people find us. So please do that. Also, let's welcome to the show our regular panelists, the Lady James Dean herself, Ms. Rhea Butcher.
Hello.
How are you doing, Rhea?
I'm feeling fantastic. Really caffeinated. back from my trip to Portland for the Bridgetown Comedy Festival.
Yeah,
feeling real weird.
We were on two airplanes today.
Like strange foods, you know, and lots of micro brews that were like 2 cents. It's like
shit
used
is.
Hay pennies to buy them because that's the currency up there in Portland.
Yeah, shit is cheap up there.
It's so cheap.
Also, Afro spokesperson, Mr. Ricky Carmona. How are you doing, Ricky?
What it do, people?
I see.
All is good.
I see that you are wearing a Maximum Fun t-shirt.
Who got a free t-shirt? Rocked it. Got it yesterday. Rocking it today.
Oh, my
rocking
God.
Today.
Rocking that rocket tee.
That's what's up.
You rocking a rocket, girl. So, guys, today on the show, we've got some movie news. We've got a chat with a filmmaker and director, Max Borenstein, and we also have a review of the movie Godzilla.
Yes.
So much to get through. So exciting. Let's start off right up top. With some movie news.
Yay.
I'm trying to really bonk that. I think it's going very well. Last week we were talking about Jurassic Park 3D on IMAX or not on IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't realize that I realized this week is that you can also take it home with you. Did you know that they're also releasing the Jurassic Park 3D edition that literally I think also comes with a Blu-ray copy and like a not Blu-ray. Like, I think it comes with, like, a bad copy, then, like, one that fell in the toilet, one that's made of gold. Two copies of Jurassic Park 3. So, all in all, 6 Jurassic Parks in that particular section. I got a couple things to cover here. Number one, Rhea, you are somebody who would give a shit about this. I think you are, Ricky, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I actually care about different formats.
Sure. I super do.
Boy,
we gotta school you, girl.
I know.
We gotta get you on that.
I know this is not your thing. Why do I give a shit about Blu-rays? Tell me why I care.
Because do you want to watch Terminator 2 in an all right kind of way, or do you want it? Do you want to watch it the best way that it can possibly look?
Well, follow
and
up.
And sound.
Follow up. Do I own a TV right now? No.
Do you?
So it's always going to look like garbage.
There's
no way.
To live in 2013, where we have, you got, girl, when I make that paper, what I'm going to do is buy you an amazing
yes,
TV.
Please mail me a TV to the Maximum Fun headquarters. Okay, so Rhea, that's what you think is just like, it's a completely different. Can I ask you this? Now that things are in high definition on television, oftentimes you can see things like stretch marks and
mm-hmm.
makeup lines.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that I could see on a Blu-ray? Because I know I want to see where that T-Rex keep his face on.
Well, absolutely. I mean, when the Back to the Future Blu-rays came out, I was like, holy crap. Look at James Tolkien's neck. Like the one of the...
Who did you say?
Tolkien.
I think it is.
That
who
plays,
does he play?
Is he one of like Biff's boys?
No, J.R.R. Tolkien?
No, not the.
Are you talking about the principal?
Yes, the principal.
Yeah.
And yes, J.R.R.
Slacker.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, J.R.R. Tolkien. He wrote King of the Rings.
But I'm like a little bit on the fence about some blue. I think for like action movies and movies with special effects, it looks pretty great usually if the transfer to Blu-ray. But then some movies just look insane. I think they actually do look better on VHS. But
they almost
if you
look
have,
like VHS.
Absolutely.
Like Iron Man on Blu-ray, it's weird looking.
It's like watching a BBC TV show or
yeah.
something. Like it's Uncanny Valley or
Somebody
something.
Sent me a link to a website where there's a feature that you can actually take off of your very nice TV, Cameron, which I will buy you, where there's a feature that you can take off so that it doesn't look as weird
right.
when you watch it. I'll try and remember that. I'll make a note of that.
Wait, so then follow-up question. because that, so all of that said, how would you guys feel about seeing a 3D movie in your house? Have you guys seen a 3D movie on a 3D television?
Yeah.
What is that experience like? I haven't done it yet.
I was so not against it, and then I watched one, and I was like, oh, this is pretty amazing. It actually, and it actually was not a movie. It was a video game. It was like NBA Live, whatever, 2K, I don't have a girlfriend, something like that. and it looked amazing. And then we played this the last Batman game that came out, Arkham City. And yeah, I mean, it's...
Arkham Asylum.
Arkham, yes, I'm sorry.
I believe it's...
sorry.
I don't know. I'm just trying
Put your Batman
hey, I don't
want to
get
down.
Tweeted at, that's all.
Wait, so Rhea, have you seen a 3D movie? I didn't think you have.
No, not in like a home theater situation. Just at Best Buy for like 5 minutes. I think I looked at an aquarium for a little bit.
What?
You know how they have like demo
Well, I've actually been to the aquarium.
Yeah.
Like, to the,
that's,
like,
it's not
the
realistic
new
enough
England
for
aquarium.
Me.
So I want to just cover a couple more things. Bryan Singer, who's directing the new X-Men Days of Future Past, he tweeted out a picture of Halle Berry today. Guys, I don't know if you know this, but the new Storm got short hair.
Yes, she
Yay.
Do. Yes,
now,
she do.
How, see, this I actually think is a news story. Because mm-hmm. a woman, especially in an action movie, first of all, a woman being in a movie in general with short hair, is done way less than actually women have short hair. Like the percentage on that, number of women that have short hair, number of women that have, like even older women in movies have short hair. There's that stupid wedding movie that's coming out right now. What is
oh,
that
yeah,
even
big
called?
Wedding.
Oh, where, like, it's called Ricky, Don't See This.
Yeah. Right, but it's all like 60-year-old women with this very long, like
right.
ponytail. Like 60-year-old women don't have ponytails.
Like Diane Keaton.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Yes. I mean, Diane Keaton has long hair,
of course,
but
she
also wears gloves everywhere. So, I mean, how you can't trust her. Also, you love her. She's great in everything she's in. But short hair on a superhero, especially because I think that we've worried so much up until this point about feminizing superheroes
sure.
that are chicks. Like,
yeah.
if you're going to be a superhero and a chick, you're going to be in a cat suit. You're going to be, your butt is going to be on
yep.
another male superhero. So to really, I know it seems silly, but just even the short haircut for me feels like a huge step. I can't wait to see it in the movie.
Yeah, the only ones I can think of off the top of my head are obviously Ellen Ripley, Sigourney Weaver in Aliens, and Diane Wiest in The Lost Boys. those are two short-haired
yeah,
female hero action heroes.
Let me throw this out there. Didn't Halle Berry have short hair in Catwoman?
I think she did.
So, I mean, that movie
so,
really didn't
so
do very
So what
well.
You're saying is Halle Berry, only chick pulling off action hero short hair.
Yeah, she's
yeah.
super.
Oh.
My hat's off to her. And underneath that hat, short hair.
Yeah,
but just on the one side. So speaking of photos, there was something also tweeted out. This is also a new thing, just a separate side note. Directors and actors and passersby capturing movies on Twitter sending out pictures. So this is how we're getting our film stills these days, which
right.
is really crazy. But also, Jamie Foxx, the new bad guy, Electro, in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Did you guys see those photos
what?
Of Jamie
oh,
Foxx?
Yeah.
No,
he has,
I haven't
like,
seen that yet.
He's like in Blueface, which I can't believe
oh.
I just said.
Whoa, whoa. The he audacity.
Looks, he looks like he Mr. Freeze. Jamie Foxx being in an action movie, that was another thing that I was thinking about. I was thinking about him being in a superhero and comic book movie. And I was thinking, you know, last week we talked about chicks that we wanted to see in space. This was kind of the continuation of that. I was thinking, I actually thought about it and I looked at his filmography because I thought, surely he has punched a bunch of people while wearing tight pants before. Tight Lycra pants. But when I looked at it, nothing stood out.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's been blind, but he wasn't Daredevil. So my point is, who else would we like to see? First of all, I'm stoked on seeing him in a superhero movie.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think I would love to see him, like, replace Will Smith, actually. Or dethrone Will Smith from all the roles that Will... Not... Okay. I think that Jamie Foxx is super awesome after seeing him in Django.
So what you're saying is... Go to black guy for stomping on things you want them to be Jamie
Yeah, exactly.
Foxx.
I want Jamie Foxx to welcome everyone to Earth.
Can't there just be two black guys? Can't there just be two black guys?
Sure.
We can stop it at two. There doesn't have to be three. Let's not get crazy.
When I watch Django, which I'm a huge fan of, I almost look at that as like he's a superhero in this movie.
Totally.
Because he does amazing thing. It's like watching Indiana Jones beat up the Nazis. I get to watch this black dude beat the shit out of these racist white people. I'm in.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And Will Smith said no to that. So boom, you kind of got your wish right there.
Exactly. I mean, it was written for him, and I mean, whatever. Anyway, but yeah, Jamie Foxx, super into it.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see him in those pants. Actually, I think he's wearing a hood and a cape for most of it. But unfortunately, because another thing about Django is that you get to see his Django. And it is unchained. Do you know what I'm saying? It is off the unchain. I can't believe are we okay? I'm exhausted.
Yeah, we're exhausted.
We've been on a flight too long.
I hope you guys are having a good time.
Listen,
we are.
Some of what we may have said just now was probably racist, plus I referred to a Django as a penis or a penis as a Django. I'm not sure which one. Either way, keep it. It's perfect. We'll be back to talk to screenwriter Max Borenstein in the studio with us today after this. So today we are going to welcome a film writer and director, Mr. Max Borenstein, to the show. So excited he could be here with us. I'm actually really excited about this because, okay, here's what's going on. He's a film writer and a director. He's also like a young dude. I think that's why I wanted to talk to you most, because like I know, because we're human friends outside of podcasts. I know you have a big year coming up, but then also we're going to save that as a, that'll be the final reveal in this little chat.
Teaser.
Why this is a big year for you.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, there's a spoiler alert. This is the trailer for the end of this 20-minute interview. This is kind of a little bit of a, it's a viral marketing scheme. But I also, I don't know. I mean, I think it's amazing. Okay, because a lot of times people, when you are a stand-up comic, they say, how do you have that job? Then when I met you and I found out what your job is, that was the exact same question I asked you. Because how do you become a screenwriter? How do you? So let's just start there. Max Borenstein, how do you become a screenwriter?
That's a really good question. It depends what you mean by become, if you become. I mean, I think I've always loved movies and started to imagine them, and there came a moment that I remember very distinctly where I learned that they were written.
Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome.
That is such a great point. How hilarious and totally true. I mean, I think it's sort of the same thing with stand-up where people are like, I can't believe that you can speak perfectly for an hour on a subject mess anything up.
Movies are written?
Whoa.
Some of them.
Yeah. Right. Some are not written. That's true. Those are
Blair Witch Project.
Those are the Blair Witch Project. That's real.
Right. Yes.
That's real.
Cloverfield, you know? Like it.
So when did you, do you remember what movie it was that you realized was
it
written?
Wasn't even a movie. It was that I always loved movies, and my parents are older, and so they got me watching like old movies, and I got into watching old movies, and then I would, I think during like middle school, I would just go to the Tower Video, which had a better selection than Hollywood or Blockbuster, and I would just rent. I'd go through there. They also had a very like satisfying feel to the video boxes. They were these like poofy not the hard rubber kind that always made you feel like you were renting porn.
Yeah.
But like but they were poofy, and they had like the covers actually on it.
Yeah.
So you know, some places you'd go and they'd have like, you'd have to like bring them the box and they'd exchange it for some like bland looking box.
Right.
Or like a Xeroxed version of Splash. Yeah.
No, I wanted
that.
To like, there's like a tactile thing about having a video box that would go like,
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what's awesome about you going to a movie store and renting old movies is that in the movie of your life, you actually end up becoming a screenwriter. Like, it's just, like, you set your own self up for, did you have glasses at the time?
I had, maybe. I never wore them.
Doesn't that feel correct,
nerdy, though? That was like definitely, believe me, I was nerdy.
Just a stack of movies, a stack of VHS tapes.
I would rent VHS, and I would buy, and I had two VCRs. Like, I borrowed the one from the living room and the one from my parents' bedroom, and I'd have them both, and I would just dub while doing homework.
That's absolutely.
I would just dub, like, three or four movies every night.
Nice.
And I would, like, partially watch them and then watch them later. And so I really don't watch enough movies. Like, I wish I did. But at the time, I watched a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Sure.
And movies that, as a result of that, like, at some point, they became, like, because you're in that phase of, like, middle school and high school, at least I was, where it was, like, the more obscure and the, like, snootier, the better.
Yeah.
And so I just worked my way through like the foreign films and like the, you know, and but so anyway, so at some point it became clear that I really liked to do that. And then and my mom was selling insurance like on the phone. And as a result, she had lists of people and she's very friendly. And so at some point she and so she did would like. You know how you hang up on telemarketers, and it wasn't yes. it wasn't like cheesy telemarketing. It was like a, oh, yeah. it was like a little bit, you know, it was like the kind of telemarketing people actually wanted because it was like people over 65 and they needed this.
Sure, plus
but,
this is a while ago.
But like most people hang up, and like no one ever hangs up on her because she's like really, really friendly and like gregarious. And so anyway, she would find out what people did, and one person was. He ran a production company with Oliver Stone. She found that out.
She just
like, in a conversation.
The guy.
Right, to sell him insurance.
Just a random...
and did sell him insurance,
dude.
I'm pretty sure. But he but she also said, well, do you have it, do you need interns? And
I
so they gave her
son.
A phone number, which I then called and I asked, you know, do you need a summer intern? And they didn't know who I was or how old I was or what. But I think they just assumed naturally I was like, I now realize, probably like a USC student or UCLA student or whatever.
Sure.
And so they said, yeah, sure, and come by. And they gave me some kind of like a day, like an appointment. And it was in Santa Monica and my parents, like we lived in the valley. And so my parents drove me. My dad was sitting in the lobby, like on the couch. It was so embarrassing. Because I was 13 and really... but didn't know how awkward it was. So they came out and I went in and I interviewed.
Were you wearing a suit? I just need
no,
to know that.
No, I was not.
Like
I wasn't as cool as like the kid from Rushmore.
Like I was thinking of it as like maybe an ill-fitting suit. In my mind,
whatever,
it was an ill-fitting suit.
I promise you whatever it was ill-fitting.
Okay.
It wasn't a suit.
Were you wearing the VHS box?
Yeah, just...
No. but it
so
did
snug.
Serve me. Because I... So, you know, so we went in... And they asked me, you know, I think, I don't know what they thought, because I was clearly 13. Like, I was chubby and, like, had a lot, like, a few pimples, but, like, enough where you're like, yeah, that's, you know.
That's
yeah.
a child.
That's a child, not a college student, not even a high school graduate. And so, but the people who I was interviewing with, two people, and they were very nice, and they asked me, like, what my favorite movies were, and the answers I think were they would have surprised me like if I was talking to a kid now because I was like Rashomon and you know.
The 400 blows.
You said yes. Rashomon. Yeah.
And I liked Truffaut, but I loved Kurosawa.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Sounds like you nailed this interview.
Yeah.
Well, and so they said they said, well, it's gonna suck. You're gonna pour coffee and you're gonna Xerox. And, but yeah, you know, if you're interested. And I was like, yeah, I'd love to.
To a 13-year-old,
you know?
I never get to pour coffee.
Exactly,
I can't even
right.
drink coffee.
Well, that was the problem. So when I got home over the canyon or through the canyon to the valley. And, by the time we got there, there was an answering machine message like blinking. The answering machine message is from them and they say, oh, we're really sorry. We read the form that I filled out once they gave me the job.
Yeah.
And they found out that I was 13 years old and their lawyers said, that's child labor. And so they were really apologetic. And then I remember being really disappointed for a chunk of time. But then sometime later that night, I got a call from one of the guys who I had interviewed with. Who said, you know what, maybe why don't you come back in for coffee and whatever, you know, like he felt bad. And so I went back a couple weeks later and we had it did instead of coffee. It was like, well, I'll come to the office. And then we had a chat and he gave me some scripts to read and said, you know, do coverage on these. And then, you know, and that was like the first time I'd ever seen a screenplay or really realized that there's a whole thing of screenwriting, that it's not just you decide what the movie's going to be and then, like, when you're making it, but there's this whole special commerce and universe underbelly of screenwriters.
Yeah.
In this world.
Sure.
And so I did that, and then I came back in and I'd written coverage or whatever, and one thing led to another where every few weeks he would just invite me back, and at some point he said, you know what, why don't you come up with an idea to write? And I did, and I wrote it over the course. I wrote like 8 drafts of it over the course of the next year. But the script was basically, you know, the return of Martin Guerre, that like story. It's like they made a play, but it's like a classic story.
No, Max, no. Because we're regular people.
Right. Yeah. Well,
what I mean is by that, everything that you're saying is the most impressive 13-year-old I've ever heard of.
Can you say coverage again?
Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying this at all to make fun of you.
No,
just
not
like,
at all.
How did you? I mean, when I was 13, holy crap! Like I had no idea. What were you when I was? I can't even.
When I was 13, I was watching the movies, but they were still movies were somewhere else. They were in a box on my TV, or they were in the big magic theater that I went to go see. They weren't. My mom is going to take me.
So did you guys grow up in LA?
I was to say maybe that's one part about because you grew up. You grew up around movies. Like it's all here, and this is the industry here.
Yeah, I don't have any family. I mean, I take that back. My grandma. Who lived in New York all her life, but she was an extra in many, many movies and Law and Order episodes. But that wasn't a thing, you know, right? But nonetheless, like growing up, I think being in LA, even having no connection, like family connection to the movie business, like it's definitely a part of the city in a way. And
I think you're making a really good point. I mean, it's like growing up in D.C.
Yes,
like you suddenly realize that senators are actually just humans,
right?
And this is just their job,
right?
So I think you're totally right. I mean, even just moving here in the last. You know, 6 months that I've been here, and I'm sure Ricky, this is your experience as well in Rio. That, you just realize it's actually they're human beings. It's all around you. It's just an industry, and it's like magic, but it's also just a job,
right? And it's a magical job, and it's a special. And I guess politics in DC is like that. DC is like the most comparable town that
I've
ever been to.
Yeah, because what else has such a one horse? Yeah,
and the ironic thing is like
it's just
not
a big horse.
It's never been the biggest industry here, but it's the one that like perfectly. Defines this mm-hmm. city, which is
absolutely.
Like this myth-making factory.
Wait,
you know?
I want to follow up with this. So you went to Yale, yes?
Uh-huh.
And did you study film there?
No.
What did you study?
Well, so this same guy who is wonderful. I won't name him because I don't know. But he's amazing, and he's still a mentor to me.
To me, he just looks like Oliver Stone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once
well,
he said Oliver Stone,
all
like
I remember,
it's Oliver Stone.
All I remember about Oliver Stone is that I remember one time sitting on that couch in the waiting room with my dad, of course, who had to drive me, and out of the conference room that we were then going to go meet in, not Oliver, but Oliver Stone walked out with Tom Cruise, who I remember being.
What?
I remember because they were he was going to do for this moment he was thinking of directing Mission Impossible 2, which John Woo did.
Oh wow!
Right.
And obviously they worked on Born on the 4th of July or whatever before that.
Right. But,
so they walked out together. I just remember two things. I remember that Oliver Stone was wearing black shorts and orange, like thick, like orange sweat socks, like tube socks, that, like bright, like orange, yeah. like you were directing traffic orange.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then Oliver Stone was really short but had ridiculous arms. I just remember those two things. And being like, wow.
Did your dad ever high-five you as you guys were driving? I feel like I hope that your parents, like, at least once or twice, like, that you went to bed and they just looked at each other and they were like, holy shit, what a kid. You know, like, just can you even imagine that you're sitting there having, like just leisurely reading magazines and your kid is, like, just... rubbing shoulders with Tom Cruise. That's a great moment. I love that moment.
Well, gaping at him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Rubbing shoulders, but your shoulders came up to like his mid. Actually, he is
by the
short.
Way, no, yeah.
Yeah.
That was
never
the thing.
Mind.
Yeah.
Size of his 13-year-old. So
I was answering the question though about what I studied, and so that guy John, who I had sort of mentored with, he wrote me a wonderful letter of recommendation, which I'm convinced got me in still. But he also. He said, you know, don't, because I was thinking, do I go to film school or what? I know I want to do that. And he said, you know, I don't, you know, not to cast any aspersions on film school, but I don't think you need to go to film school. I don't think anyone needs to go to film school was his opinion as an undergraduate. He felt like, look, if you want to study film, like, in some kind of, like, intellectual capacity, do it as a graduate. Or maybe, you know, study it if you want to as an undergrad. But, like, in terms of... You know, he thought, get the best education you can get, especially as a writer. Just learn as many stories as you can and do that. And then, you know, read things because you're never going to do that again. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I mean, studying I feel like this is what I got. This is the advice I got before I went to college. It sounds like it's maybe similar that, like, if you study the, unless you're going to med school or something like that, where you absolutely need to know how to cut open veins, anything that
but
you're
even that's
studying,
graduate school. It's
yeah,
like,
you're right.
God,
you're right.
A doctor should read a book first.
Yeah,
before
you're
they
right.
Cut right.
They should.
Veins,
yes, you know? They should. Yes. Yeah. That being said, please, I hope all my doctors have studied medicine from the day they were five. No, but yeah, there is a sort of a, especially if you're going into the arts, the more you can expand your horizons,
yeah, the breadth,
the more you're going to be able to bring in eventually. Yeah. If you're only ever studying film, then you're, what can you reference besides films?
That, there are definitely, you know, people like that, I think, but the people you, that like who tend to do things that you admire are the people who have like an interesting broad array of interests and whatever.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's I studied English.
But you made a movie while you
were
there.
Well, so then going in, it all comes back to John. So then going into my senior year, I had been every summer I was writing scripts. So I got through a lot of really bad scripts. You know, like early that will never see the light of day. That was good, you know. But I would do that every summer, and a couple times I had through him there was an opportunity once to intern. At that point, he was at HBO, I think, and I almost got it, but I got the job. But then I was like, I had this crisis moment, and I'm really, I'm a very much self-motivated person. Like I don't like the idea of having other people telling me, like, I can handle it if it's me writing the thing, you know, but like, but so I remember this moment of like, it was a cool job. It was like going to be an internship but it was going to be like, you know, every day. And it was going to be what that other one would have been, but every day. And I was an adult now, so I could do it. And I remember thinking to myself, this is going to mean, obviously, it's going to be hard for me to write this random thing that I, in my mind, and I think every time you're writing something, you convince yourself it's going to be amazing. It's like this wonderful, like, voodoo you perform on yourself.
Yeah.
And so and especially the younger and more ignorant you are, the better that is.
I'm sure that's true.
And so, like,
sure.
And so as I was doing it, I thought, fuck, like, if I go and if I do this job, like, I'm not going to be able to write the screenplay. That's the opportunity cost. On the other hand, so what's the positive? Like, what's the, if let's imagine the best scenario of this job. Like, my boss decides he's going to retire and move to, like, the Bahamas, and he doesn't want anyone to take his place except for me. And I get promoted, and I'm, like, the head of HBO, and I'm, like, the president of the studio. Would I want that? I mean, like, it's so absurd, but I didn't want that.
Wait, how old were you?
I wanted to write this
stupid thing. And that was the critical thinking you did?
Well, that was just like, I think it was
like
a panic attack.
You were like 19 or something. This is amazing. Jesus Christ. Yes, that is how you figure that out. I think you're absolutely right. I think that is, especially, as I'm saying, like, in the creative, you're always making that decision,
yeah,
like, doing this thing. Which,
well, and I think the thing is, like, unless your answer to that is, unless the answer to would you like to be the president of the studio or would you like to, like, toil in obscurity but at something you absolutely believe in, even though you, like, intellectually, if you thought about it, you know, that's crazy. And if the answer is, like, I'd rather be the president of the studio or anything else, then I think, like, I'm not trying to, like, toot horns. It's just, like, that was, like, it's crazy and weird, but, like, that was the thing that I was,
mean,
like,
you don't have to convince. I don't, you know? I think
I mean,
don't,
you guys are the same, in
yeah,
the
I don't
same
think
boat,
you have to convince,
like,
these broke idiots.
That's precisely the reason why I dropped out of grad school twice, because
yeah,
I didn't
yeah
want to be an art teacher, because that was, like, the end goal.
Actually,
I was going to grad school
reason
for printmaking, and, like, that's the end goal of that.
Like, of being an admirer. Like, you look at, like, the best case scenario, like, the professor you really
sure
admire.
Or
it's like,
absolutely,
do you want that? I mean, not that you're
right.
It's like a long shot you even get it, but,
yeah,
like, no.
It's a long shot to be, like, the head of printmaking in Kansas City. You know
yeah
what I mean? No,
yeah, exactly,
no shitting on
right
Kansas City, but, like, that was the end.
I was just saying, that's the same amount of critical thinking I put into, like, ordering the McRib at McDonald's. That's how far ahead I've thought. Your thought process is amazing, dude.
But I think
amazing
that, I mean, even, yes, I completely agree, but I think you are saying what a lot of comics, the decision that they're making,
oh,
every
yeah
day, with maybe not even saying it. And I totally hear you. Yes, first of all, we're all ordering McRibs every day. We're all ordering McRibs every day. Well, Rhea's never ordering McRibs, but
no,
she gets the two buns with the pickles in the middle.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
It's very
the healthy
good
way.
By the way,
the healthy
that's
McRib.
That's probably, I think that you're probably safest eating vegetarian, eating, like, meat at McDonald's.
Yeah, probably. But I do think that there's a real, I mean, what you're talking about is, I mean, it's like a privilege and also, a really amazing thing that I think a lot of people who are in the arts have done. They've looked at, I mean, I also dropped out of, I was going to be in social work school, and I looked at that and I thought to myself, like, it turns out you can go to social work school when you're 70, but you cannot start your career as a stand-up comic at 70 unless you're like Phyllis Diller, and she was much younger than that even.
Yep.
By half. So, you know, you really do have to make those decisions. And all of this leads up to, I'm so, first of all, awesome conversation. So interesting to hear everything that you're talking about and how cool. You got to this point. Yeah, it's really rad.
Thank you for having me.
And, like, inspiring. It's I don't know. I feel like I'm sweating because it's so
totally.
Inspiring.
You've lived the childhood. They just that story of going... You've lived like the big, like the movie Big, like you kind of lived that. Like,
if you put Big and
stuff,
Rushmore together,
yeah, boom, that's
you get
it,
Max.
Man.
Yeah, it's a big,
absolutely.
It's a big old Rush. It's a big old Rush. So this year is going to be a big year for you. And what do you have coming up this year?
On Memorial Day weekend of 2014, Godzilla comes out, which I
hooray!
Bam!
So I don't know if you know this. This is nothing to do with that, except it has exactly everything to do with it. We watched because we always review a movie for the show. So our review for this week, and a lot of times it's stuff that it's on Netflix Watch Instant. We reviewed the 1998 Matthew Broderick vehicle, so that we could
the Roland Emmerich.
Yeah,
the Roland Emmerich. Yes. Yeah. Dean
so
Devlin.
So that we could get our brains ready to. Eventually, and you don't have to weigh in on that film.
I will decline.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure I know how you feel about it, or how anybody feels about it, or you don't have to say anything anyway. But my point is, this is our Godzilla show.
Nice.
And that was the tie-in, is that I wanted to watch that so that we could talk about that, and then we could also talk about... That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
absolutely.
Super.
It's a huge thing, and you wrote that movie. That's a movie you're writing, and that's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah, it's it boggles my mind, but I'm excited about it. It's it's shooting right now up north in Canada with an amazing cast and an amazing director, and I think it's like gonna actually be pretty great.
Awesome.
Well, when that movie comes out, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who watch it and then read the newspaper about it, and then they go, "Hey, where the fuck did this kid come from?" So the answer is, you should have been interning for Oliver Stone when you were 13. That's how you get that job now.
Absolutely.
Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see
the
movie.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Guys, Max Bornstein, please follow this gentleman's career. He's clearly a genius and is going to do great things. We'll be back with more after this.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne.
I'm Jordan Morris.
We host the podcast Jordan Jesse Go. It's 90 minutes or so of free-flowing conversation about feelings and momentous occasions and moments of shame, and also a light sprinkling of almost unspeakable vulgarity.
Every week, we welcome a great guest from the world of film, television, or comedy to have a surprising conversation with us, something you're definitely not going to hear anywhere else.
Yeah, a very intimate conversation.
So if you want to hear us talk to some of your favorite comedians about things that aren't comedy or their latest project, tune into Jordan Jesse Go every week at MaximumFun.org or in iTunes.
We're your best friends in your podcast ears.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. First of all, wait a minute. Max Bornstein is no longer in the studio right now. That is one of the most interesting people I've ever met in my entire life.
Awesome. Absolutely.
He's awesome. Like our age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel okay about yourselves?
No, not at all. I mean...
He's been living the dream since his life started at 13. I also just assumed that when he was born, he was 13. This is a week after he was born. Just shows up in a suit.
Yeah. He's also just... And I don't want it. The funny thing about that is him showing up in a suit and all the stuff that we were talking about, him being a nerd. Like, in person, he's totally handsome. He's got cool glasses on.
He has, like, a nice flannel.
He's got a flannel on.
Cool flannel.
So I don't
cool shoes. Yeah. You know, shoes. I was digging them kicks.
I don't want to convey to the listeners that, you know, he was here talking all that big game, but also looking like this shark skin suit Hollywood type. Even worse, he talks all that big game, and he looks chill/is chill.
Yeah, totally.
Terrible. We're never going to live up to that shit. I can't wait to see his movie. Also, an exciting part of the show today, we have a head-to-head pitch it segment. In the past, we have done a competitive pitch it where all of us went around and pitched it. I will say Ricky and I tied in that round. Also, today, I will be playing the singular film executive. Additionally, listeners, you guys can tweet at us, hashtag WhamManPow. Let us know whether you prefer the head-to-head matchup, ding, ding, that's a sound effect, of Rhea Butcher and Ricky Carmona going at it and telling us what movies they want to see made. We will start right now with Ms. Rhea Butcher. Rhea, what have you pitched us today?
All right. Because I was in Portland, I was there for Bridgetown Comedy Festival. Just want to reiterate
that. Shut up about Bridgetown.
I went. They have a lot of pinball there. And I went to this place called Bar of the Gods, and they had a pinball game for the movie Congo.
Ooh.
So that got me thinking, in honor of Jurassic Park just the other day, and also, you know, Michael Crichton, may he rest in peace.
R.I.P.
And watching Godzilla.
Listen, Ms. Butcher, I'm on a tight schedule.
Oh,
all of this personal stuff aside, I don't know what Bridgetown is. I don't know what pinball machines are. I don't know who Michael Crichton is. I do remember the movie Congo, though.
Okay.
I've never been to Portland. I don't even know it exists. Are you talking about Maine?
No, the other one.
Oh, Oregon.
Oregon, yeah. Okay, so anyway, I want to do a reboot of Congo because I didn't even see that thing. I feel like not a lot of people did. Didn't do super well. It's about a monkey. People are really into monkeys these days.
It's monkey season.
Let's reboot Congo.
Okay.
Let's get Andy Serkis in there.
He'll obviously be playing the monkey.
The monkey, of course. I want Matt Damon and Naomi Watts in the lead roles, plus a Bruce Campbell cameo, because he was in the lead role, I believe, in the first one. Let's get him in there. Also bring Tim Curry back. But this time, I don't want him to play the character that he was playing in Congo originally. I want him to play the hotel manager from Home Alone 2.
All right, listen. That is Rhea Butcher's pitch it. So it is Congo,
directed by Brad Bird. And just because I want to win this one, I want Ghostface Killah to do the soundtrack.
Oh, no!
Wait a second.
Oh, no.
Oh,
okay.
Wait.
All right. So,
yes.
Rhea, if you could just do a summary really quick. What are we talking about here? Is this this is Ghostface Killah's Congo?
Yes, Ghostface Killah's Congo.
Hmm. All right. Ricky Carmona.
First of all, you know, I want to give you points right away, Rhea, for saying Ghostface Killah and not Ghostface Killer. That's very important.
I wrote the H on my paper.
And you put the H in there. Good for you, girl. Good for you. We remember, thank you for having me at this meeting, as always, thank you.
Well, he's
thank
very
you.
Polite, I don't...
We all remember the TV show Quantum Leap.
Yeah, I remember it well.
We all remember the recent successful movie that came out last year, Looper.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We might not remember the very popular actor during the early 80s, David Keith, starred in the movie Officer and a Gentleman, Stephen King's Firestarter. Very popular actor from the early 80s through till today, Keith David, starred in The Thing, They Live, recently in Cloud Atlas, a favorite of mine. So what I would like to do is do a combination of Quantum Leap and Looper called Quantum Looper Leaper. And this is a movie where Keith David has to go back in time and team up with David Keith to let the people know to not confuse either of their careers.
So it's a heavily IMDb focused movie.
Absolutely.
A lot of it takes place back in time, but bringing your iPhone with you, and then unfortunately you don't have Wi-Fi in the past.
See,
that's a whole thing.
Yes, the tagline for Looper was "Face your future, fight your past." The tagline for this actually it's "Face your future, fight your past." Keith David, David Keith, Uma Oprah, Oprah Uma, Keith David, David Keith.
I really wish there were a few rhymes in there. I'm not against what you brought to the table, but
yes.
I wish there was just one or two rhymes. Is there anything else you want to add? Perhaps a soundtrack by or a director?
Well, it's directed by Kathryn Bigelow.
Oh God. Okay,
and soundtrack by the RZA.
Oh my God.
There it is.
Boom.
Again. Can I ask a question? Is there any way that you can involve Keith and David from 6 Feet Under?
God, that was what I was gonna ask.
Wow. In this movie, the universe collapses in on itself at the end of it because of all of this.
Yes, and you can only see it if you're named David or Keith. But you can change your name, and there's a name-changing facility right outside of the theater. Okay, so right now what we're talking about is David Keith and Keith David in
Quantum Looper Leaper.
Looper Leaper, or Ghostface Killah's Congo, which, by the way, I do love the movie Congo. I only saw it the one time, but I do remember it affecting my heart. Because isn't there like one... Isn't there... Those are bad monkeys in that movie, yeah? No, I don't just mean like evil monkeys. I mean the monkeys look bad.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Judging
too...
even just by the poster,
yeah,
it looked pretty
right,
bad.
Yeah, right. Judging by the book I read. Yeah. The theatrical novelization. Those monkeys looked bad. Well, anyway... I personally am going to reserve my judgment until next week when I hear from the listeners.
Sounds good.
So I really hope that you guys weigh in. Do you want to see some Congo? Do you want to see some time travel? Do you want to see a time-traveling monkey? That's a second thing that I just thought of right now because I'm a genius. So, again, time-traveling monkey or just a monkey or just a time travel. And, hey, we are going to come back right after this, and we are going to talk about the 1998 masterpiece, Godzilla. Well, ladies and gentlemen, now it is that time in the show when we give you a brief review of a dick flick. Now, here's the... Wow, that got so sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
And I thought about it... That was the first time saying that phrase that I ever thought about a dick flicking. I'm sorry, but I did think about it.
Now that you've put it out there, yeah. It's never going to go away.
I can't
stop thinking about it.
Gosh,
you can't unflick that dick.
No, you can't. The dick's been flicked.
If you like it, then you might as well put a flick on it. All right. Come on, Ricky. Come on.
So, for those of you that are listening to the podcast for the first time, every week we pick a movie and we ask the listeners to watch along with us. So, for this week, we chose via Netflix Watch Instant Roland Emmerich's 1998 film Godzilla. I was interested in this film because I knew we were going to have Matt. Well, because I know Max. Rhea and I know Max outside of the podcast. He told us that we actually went to see Jurassic Park 3D with him, and we were dancing around like, oh, that was crazy. We're really into dinosaurs. And then like just didn't know yet that he was writing Godzilla. And I went up to him and was just like, who loves dinosaurs more than me? And then later that night, we were like, so what are you working on or whatever? And he's like, well, I'm writing Godzilla. And I was like, oh,
you might love you dinosaurs win. More yeah. than me.
You do, sir.
But in preparation for... I'm interested in the fact that there's a reboot going on with that franchise, and I knew that the Godzilla property had massively flopped in 98. Like, yeah. I knew ahead of time that this movie was a massive flop. So I thought, interesting to see it before they're rebooting it. Just as somebody who's seen... Had you guys ever seen it before? Had you guys seen...
I gave that movie my money in the theater when it was in the theater when it
came
out. And I'm still writing the letter in anger of how I want my money back. Still not done with
that. But you just keep falling asleep every time you think of the movie, yeah, so you can't get through the letter. Rhea, had you seen it?
No, I mean, maybe it was rented at a party or something, like, I don't know. I feel like I saw the video, the Puff Daddy video, so many times that I had seen the movie through via the video, but no, I had not sat down and watched the whole
thing. So I hadn't seen it either. And also, just for those of you that are listening, spoilers are going to come up in this part of the review, so if that's a problem for you, you can pause, you can watch the movie, you can come back. Also, don't worry about spoiling this movie. This ain't no movie to keep unspoiled. It's a piece of shit.
That's a great jingle.
Thank you. Thank you. Actually, the movie asked me to write that for them so that it was like a liability concern. Here's what's crazy to me about this movie. This movie, the co-writer on this, and he's the director, he is also the writer of Stargate, Independence Day, The Patriot he just directed, and The Day After Tomorrow. He also directed Stargate, Independence Day, and The Day After Tomorrow. Of all those movies.
And 2012. Don't forget 2012.
Yeah, and 2012. He did. And 2012. The year, not the movie.
Yeah, he just directed the year.
Yeah, he was standing there. But of those movies, and I know probably the biggest commercial success in their Independence Day, really a game changer in terms of summer movie blockbusters,
yeah.
Like hugely popular relaunch. Speaking of Will Smith, I mean, absolutely took that guy from, I mean, he had done Bad Boys in 95. So Independence Day was in 96. So he was already kind of like fighting people and being pithy, but he wasn't yet fighting people and like being serious.
Yeah.
And really that movie, Independence Day, obviously turned the tide of his career and what we would possibly accept from him. I mean, then not too long after that, he's playing Ali. That's obviously very different, but
right.
I think if he had never done Independence Day, he never would have gotten there. He would have only been making jokes.
Mm-hmm. I remember that it was a big deal for Independence Day because up to that point, Tom Cruise was the 4th of July movie guy. And it was a big deal because it was Will Smith, who we had all grown up with watching Fresh Prince. And it was like, oh, it's this black guy, this young black hip kid, who's now he's our guy, he's our summer movie guy now. Huge deal.
Absolutely. Huge deal. Totally. Huge deal for him. And huge, I also think, I mean, I know we were joking around about this earlier, but, you know, again, huge deal for black actors.
Absolutely.
That suddenly they could have a black actor selling out the biggest movie of the summer. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
The fact that Will Smith then took that and he didn't get stuck in like this either joking around or this rap career, all this other thing. I mean, he's done everything now. And I think Independence Day really turned the tide for him. Also, on top of that, Stargate, for me, still holds up as a movie. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. And I mean, it's so intense to think about that dude writing that movie and then coming along and doing Godzilla. This is just 4 years later. This is 4 years later.
I'm glad you're bringing this up because one of the notes that I wrote down was, what was the movie they got away with before they got to Godzilla? What was like their hit that fooled us? Like, yeah, we should let them do anything.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, all of the posters are from the maker of Independence Day. Like, if you actually look at because I looked some of them up, you know, that's what they were riding on. They were riding on that. And, I mean, not to go too much into it now. Well, maybe I'll save this for the actual discussion. But, like, huge star in this. Matthew Broderick is in this. So they got this. I mean, Ferris fucking Bueller. He's a big old star. They had a huge star. They had a huge, I mean, he's got great name recognition, and they had the biggest movie this summer. They had all that carrying them. I think they accidentally rubber stamped something that
they also didn't get like a strong female supporting. Like, who even is that woman? You know what I mean? So there's
right.
no like backup. It's very
you're right,
very strange. Anyway.
Well, just some other things to note about this director before we get even further into the movie. So this director, he specifically wanted Will Smith for Independence Day, even though he was getting backlash from the studio. He wanted a black actor in that role. He also wanted an interracial couple in The Day After Tomorrow. So that was a big thing that he stuck by. He also is a gay man and has talked openly about homophobia in Hollywood and how that has, I think, you know, without going too much into somebody being gay or straight reflecting in their films, it is interesting that these huge, like, macho blockbusters, I mean, what was more macho in 96 than Independence Day? Nothing.
Right.
And it's a gay man. He's talking about it, and he collects, like, he's like a gay and lesbian art collector, like, collects,
oh, wow.
like, specifically
oh, wow.
curated. So it's a very interesting, he's a very interesting personality to specifically make this movie. That's just something to say. He's also a climate change activist, which is why he made The Day After Tomorrow. So, I mean, it's like he's got all this stuff going for him. He's like this, you know, standing on this big pedestal. And he's making all these great, you know, strides, and he's standing up for what he believes in, except not in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. He also likes to make a shitty-ass movie once in a while. Yeah.
Other things, just a little bit of background about Godzilla, because I don't know if you guys, you know, looked into that at all, but Godzilla first appeared in 1954, and that is, of course, if you just do the math, that's just 9 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So the whole conceit for this monster is that this monster is based in some sort of radiation, some sort of nuclear fallout, and also a way that the Japanese people were processing what could possibly happen to them. That not only were they attacked in this huge way and there was this huge bomb, but also, you know, as we were starting to see, like, birth defects happening and people getting long-term radiation poisoning. And this whole monster is a symbol for that, like this great thing to put all of that on, because he has literally his fire breathing, or is called atomic breath. Godzilla has atomic breath. Other things that are interesting is that the initial way that the character design was conceived was just a bunch of different prehistoric reptiles. Like, there's the lower body of a Tyrannosaurus, the triple row of dorsal plates that are on a Stegosaurus, and the neck and forearms of an Iguanodon, and the tail and skin texture of an alligator. Where did they find all that stuff? A lot of people that did the character design have said that they found it in Life magazine. They just found like a bunch of drawings of dinosaurs and did like a collage on a vision board. Yeah. And they made Godzilla the scariest thing that could ever happen after you exposed to an atomic bomb. So that's all a lot to carry into 1998.
What you have just described there is more interesting than anything that's in this Godzilla movie. That's what I was right at. I'm taking notes here as you're talking, and I was like, I would rather see that movie. All that sounds amazing.
It's fascinating, right?
Yeah, it's totally fascinating.
So I want to just point out two more things before we go on to our best and worst parts. There is a Siskel and Ebert nod in this movie that is very strange. There is a mayor, Ebert, with a sidekick that's called Gene, that's clearly Siskel. And that is weird and doesn't make any sense because the rest of the movie is not a farce.
Do you know why they did that? He was mad about
a review.
Yeah.
He panned.
And then Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert were like, hey, why don't you have us get smashed or something? Like, it doesn't even make sense as a pan because they're not even really making fun of them too much.
No, they're not. They're just around and one of them eats candy. Yeah, it's
really
weird.
It really made me realize I miss like 80s, 90s New York mayor movie banter.
Totally.
Like that, I feel like that was a thing for a while. Like from Ghostbusters on, it was like, make sure, can we get a scene with the mayor and like some crazy... just somebody that he tells what to do, or there's just some kind of rapport there, like a Laurel and Hardy type thing. Like when I saw that, I was like, of course this is 1990, whatever,
and you know,
it's 8.
It was great to see this movie weirdly, like I didn't know that character was in there, but it was great to see the character of Roger Ebert just a couple weeks after his passing, because it does make you realize, I mean, he was an untrained film critic who was so dedicated and so smart and so on top of his career and so omnipresent that this is a kids movie. Kids seeing this movie would know that reference. I mean, definitely adults would, but even kids would know the name of a film reviewer.
Right.
So, I mean, like, if you were wondering at all whether or not that man has a huge shadow, as a shadow of the size of Godzilla.
I mean, both of them.
Yeah,
really.
Right, exactly. Absolutely.
Just to,
So, okay, Rhea, best part of the movie for you. Best fart of the movie for you.
Fart of the movie. Okay. Not including the Taco Bell tie-in, which I actually think is my favorite part because I'm a huge fan of Taco Bell.
Big Taco Bell fan.
Because I want to remind you guys that this is like the, I think we need a bigger box Taco Bell commercial for this guy.
Wow.
Little Yo Quiero of Taco Bell. And there's a Taco Bell bag and a couple signs in the movie, which perked me up a ton. My favorite part of this movie is catching a glimpse of some Josta signage in Madison Square Garden.
Wait, I don't even know what that is.
Josta is like an urban-themed soda that came out by Pepsi Cola. Came out through Pepsi Cola in like around 96, and I loved it. I don't even know what the flavor was supposed to be.
Urban.
That was my favorite part, because it just like threw me back to like 96.
Okay, feel real good. Ricky, favorite part.
There was an amazing amount of amazing looking up in the sky acting. What's going on? Oh my goodness.
Oh my God, that's so awesome.
There are so many shots where people are just like looking that way. Where I was like, wow, good. Whoever they got to do that, solid.
Yeah.
And Godzilla's verse on Come With Me, the P. Diddy song.
Yeah.
I'm triumphant.
Well, you know, Ricky, that's interesting that you said that because actually I think that this movie came so close in a couple places to actually doing some really nice actual Godzilla-ing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. When Godzilla's around, you're supposed to look at the sky and go, oh, like, Godzilla! You're actually supposed to literally yell his name at him.
Yeah.
And another thing that I thought this movie... there are some buildings in this movie that are very clearly models.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Like, I love the look of a city that's a model city. And I also think that there were a couple times that they used those and then the computer generated Godzilla to kind of show really neat movement patterns. He has cool legs. He like runs in a cool way. And I wish to God that the movie had just trusted itself at all there and just gone full Dick Tracy. Like, I wish they had just actually made, like, put it on a table and make, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to make it look a little bit like, there's, if you've ever been on the Peter Pan ride at Disney World or Disneyland, what's great about it, it's like this great old school ride because down where the ride starts, all the characters are like full-size, life-size characters. And then as you go up the track, you're supposed to be flying. And the way that they convey that is that they just slowly make the characters like going up an incline and then also ever smaller. And it's the most hilarious but like perfect effect because it's just... It's just a ride. It has always worked. How do we show perspective? We just have like a 2-inch Wendy a foot from your face. So, I mean, I feel like that I would have loved to just have the movie trust itself on that. We don't need that. Looks cool. Like,
this is
to
the
me,
most
that
insecure
looks cool.
movie I think I've probably ever seen.
It is an insecure movie. Yeah. So, Rhea, your worst part.
My worst part is this whole movie just feels like a series of meanwhile. There are so many things and characters and side plots and weird things going on. And that's kind of a Roland Emmerich thing that he likes to have a couple of, you know, like the human interest part and then the crazy thing. But like there, I had no idea what was going on.
I think that was something I noticed as well.
Absolutely.
Ricky, what was your worst part?
All right. Let's go down the list. I'll go along with what Rhea was saying here. This is like a fucked up episode of The Love Boat where it's like, where are all these people showing up? Why? How? Every time somebody shows up, I'm like, what are you doing in this movie? It's like when you're, it's like when you go to a party and it's the worst party because everybody who you want to show up is who's not showing up. Like, what are you? Oh, you're here now? Oh, I'm stuck here.
It's just a party of a bunch of dips and no chips, you know?
Those opening credits, this is a movie about Godzilla. It needs to be epic from the get-go, and it starts off with these terrible golden credits. Godzilla should have been huge across the screen.
Totally.
And it's like right in the little corner while I'm watching, while we watch like baby Godzilla see this island being exploded, you know, the nuclear bomb goes off that, but he calls other baby Godzillas over. Did you guys see that scene?
That was like the most tedious opening credits I've ever seen.
It was
probably terrible.
Like,
I would have rather have just had like a blank screen and then just Godzilla, because like I didn't learn anything.
Absolutely. I would rather that, which just starts off like black screen, bam, Godzilla, and then we get on with the story.
Go, Godzilla, go.
There's just things in this movie that don't make sense. Godzilla disappears
a lot
during this movie. Where
like
is Godzilla
bunch.
At? Where
Pretty
is he going?
Big.
How can they not find...
I don't think the subway is that big.
Right?
You know?
I started imagining where Godzilla could be. Like, is he seeing, like Spider-Man on Broadway?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Chomping on some popcorn with his legs crossed.
He's
in the
trying out
theater.
For the Knicks one day.
Yeah, it is a funny... portrait of Manhattan that it's
hey.
Like, hey, stuff's crazy. You can lose a dinosaur in this place. You don't understand. Shit goes down. It's crazy. You can't even find anybody.
I would love to see that movie of Godzilla's Day Off. You know,
oh
like
my God,
Ferris
totally
his
totally.
Way.
Home Alone 2, Godzilla's Lost in New York.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to go on. This is my worst part. And that is modern Matthew Broderick.
I
brought him up earlier. But here's the thing. Like, I love a Ferris Bueller Matthew Broderick. I also love Matthew Broderick in The Producers. If you've seen him in that, he's fantastic and he's nailing what it is. Unfortunately, he just got kind of nerdy as he grew up. Like, he didn't stay handsome and
quirky
or like
right.
or like he's not a you can't say fuck you to authority when you're 40, like you just can't anymore,
right.
especially when you've got a cute baby face, like whatever he was doing, that kind of rakish like I'll never be, you know, like you can't do that when you're 40. So he fell into this weird like black hole of accepting movie roles like this where he seems He seems so weirdly calm. He's a worm scientist. Why he's involved in Godzilla has nothing to do with anything. He literally gets in a cab in the movie and goes, New York Airport, which is amazing because there are two airports in New York and neither of them is called New York Airport.
His best scene in that movie is when he's singing Singing in the Rain.
It is, because he's got a fantastic voice.
Because he really sells it.
The thing about Matthew Broderick is he should be on Broadway. He should also be in musicals. I love musicals. I know I'm not going to get any love from this group on this, but I love musicals and he's fantastic in them. Matthew, don't do this again. Don't do this again. Your wife, she loves you. She didn't want to see you do this.
I thought she was great as Godzilla.
Oh.
Oh, no. Not a Sarah Jessica Parker joke.
I did.
No, not in my house. That was my Godzilla roar.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is copyrighted. Did you know that, Ricky?
I did not know that.
It's copyrighted. It is a sound effect that is copyrighted. And here's how you make it. You take a leather glove and you slide it up and down on a double bass.
Really?
And that is how you make
the copyright. Oh, it has to be a double bass.
I swear to God.
That's funny.
Also, there's a specific kind of leather. Yeah.
That's right. That's
what I was trying to guitar, but
so,
whatever.
So, to conclude our review, Rhea, scale of 1 to 5, radioactive worms. How many radioactive worms would you give Godzilla?
1.
Okay. Yeah. Ricky, scale of 1 to 5 beginner's level acting classes that the people in this movie needed to take. How many beginner's level acting classes that the people in this movie needed to take would you give Godzilla?
I would say go be an accountant.
Yeah.
Go do something else. You cannot go to an acting school. I'm sorry. Not happening.
Are you going to give it a 0?
I give it a 0. Wow. Yes, I'm sorry. 0.
No, that's amazing.
I mean, I would give mine as I didn't know 0 was an option. I'd rather watch Earthworm Jim the video game on a loop and watch that movie again.
It really is the love interest in this she's never done anything else.
I was thinking of you two so much at the moment where it cuts to the scene and she's in bed crying.
Yes.
She's in goddamn bed goddamn crying. What are you doing? She might as well have started cooking or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
That, painting her nails
really?
Or something.
Really?
I'll never be taken seriously as a news anchor. Yeah. I'm going home and I'm eating Top Ramen. That's what she does.
So yeah. Terrible.
Well, I personally also, I am going to give Godzilla half of a giant lizard egg on a scale of 1 to 5 giant lizard eggs. Here's why. I think if you want to, just go on YouTube and see if you can find any clips of the actual monster in this movie. I think the monster design is not as bad as it could be. It's he has like cool legs. I know that seems really strange, but he has very interesting muscular legs. And especially in light of the fact that this movie is also a giant ripoff of Jurassic Park,
yeah.
At least they
so
did something
ways.
That was yeah. a little bit different than Jurassic Park, which is they made him have like a weird humanoid muscular body. So just look up the stills from this movie of what they did with the Godzilla. That's a half, that's a 0.5 giant lizard egg. That's all you need. We are going to send you on our way with some of our thoughts that we're having this week. Guys, Rhea.
Yes.
What are you thinking about this week?
Well, first of all, I'm thinking about Bridgetown.
Oh
sorry,
God.
I just had to do it one more time.
No.
Do
people
anyway,
on talk
the pod,
about it.
Does anybody even know what you're talking
Probably
about?
Not.
It's a comedy festival.
I mean, now they do.
We were just there for the weekend.
It's
yeah.
a wonderful
Portland,
comedy
Oregon.
Festival.
Yeah, it's pretty
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? I just thought of this via the Holly Berry conversation. So I don't have the actual web address, but I'm sure if you search for a couple Google terms, somebody started a Tumblr where they drew Hawkeye, the superhero, as a like example female superhero. Like they would take a shot from a comic book, say of like Elektra or something, and then they themselves would redraw that pose with Hawkeye to show how ridiculous the poses are for female superheroes. And then people started submitting it. Some of the drawings are like just, you know, really rudimentary and stuff. But the feeling of the Tumblr, it's really awesome and it's worth checking out. And then when you see all of that stuff together, you realize, like, holy shit, these female superheroes are just, like, crime-fighting with their butts. You know, like, their butts are up, their boobs are separated, they're always, like, cheated back to the, like, come on.
That's
come
right.
on.
So much butt crime solved. Ricky Carmona, what are you thinking about this week?
I kind of want to pitch butt crime mysteries now, yeah, just after, yeah. That, after that right there. Here's what I would like to talk about real quick is that 93.5 K-Day, old school hip-hop station, is going away.
Oh, no.
I know. For those of you who don't live in the Los Angeles area, 93.5 is an old school hip-hop station, and it has been bought out. It's going to be turned into a Chinese language radio station. I don't know when, they're saying in the next 3 months, but that's very sad because that's like a legendary radio station. It helped launch the careers of Snoop, just a lot of LA rappers who we all love. Snoop Dogg, friend of the show.
Yeah,
I made that up.
Yeah,
I made that up. But yeah, it's just going to be so sad to see that go away. How am I supposed to get my daily dose of old school hip hop and auto insurance premium rates? Those commercials are great, so I'm going to miss that. K-Day, we're not going to do this every day. I'm so sorry that it's going away. So listen to K-Day. Support them as much as you can before they go away, because who knows? Maybe if people listen to it enough, they'll be like, hey, we'll stick around, or they'll go to another station.
Well, I'm so sorry.
I'm sad.
I have the weirdest possible. This is what I'm thinking about. I am thinking about the city of San Francisco. Oh. Because on our way to Portland, we stopped and did a show. Rhea and I did a show in San Francisco. It's literally the first time I've been to that city. And it is also, it looks totally different than I thought it would look. I don't know why. I'm constantly shocked to see palm trees in places that are not Florida. I think that every time it happens. Also, I just felt like, what I liked about that city is that it seems like there's a little bit of a Manhattan vibe going on, because it's kind of raw, gritty, dirty. There's a lot of different cultures going on. And I mean, definitely, like, if you go to Portland, that's a city where everybody's kind of comfy. They're doing their own thing. It's a beautiful city to visit. But like, if you need your dose of humans spitting on humans or like feces on the street or but then also like a great restaurant and lots of culture and beautiful views of the ocean. Like, if you're looking for those things,
all that,
and you can't get all the way to Manhattan, I would like to recommend the city of San Francisco.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to go back there and do more shows and hang out and try and see different parts of the city. I thought it was rad and not what I don't know. I expected it to be very, like, clean and full house-y.
Yeah.
But it is raw, and I like that. I like a raw city. It's a nice balance to have those in our country. So check out San Francisco.
You can see that all from a trolley car.
You can see it all from a trolley car. So thank you guys so much for listening this week. Next week, we will be reviewing Oblivion. It is in theaters now. I think we're going to try and see it on IMAX 3D.
Absolutely.
Ricky, what you're thinking, but please go check it out if you have a chance. Or if you don't have a chance, just listen anyway. We're obviously hilarious. It's entertaining regardless. Until then, I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
I'm Ricky Carmona.
Wham Bim Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun headquarters by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you, Lindsay, and Maximum Fun, and thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.